From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of March 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley. He's at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, the folks at the Andersons Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana, will join us to take up the cash grain market. Along the way, we'll take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural news and get an update on what one of our former leaders in the cattle industry thinks about the marketplace and the future of agriculture. And it all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Either way, the price has settled in Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon. May futures in the wheat pit down 5 3/4 for the soft red. Settlement price at $6.62. July, the harvest month at $6.96, down 4.5 cents. And September, 3 1/4 lower at $7.34.5. From the corn pit in Chicago, 19.5 cents loss in the nearby contract. $6.16.5. The settlement price, July at $6.23.5, down 18 3/4. September at $5.83, down 11, and December futures again today, up a penny and a quarter at $5.49 1/4. March futures for next year in the corn pit at $5.57 1/2, finished the day unchanged. Soy complex, May beans, 17 cents higher, $12.87, the settlement price. July at $12.95 1/4, up 17 1/4. August, $12.90 3/4, up 17 1/4, and September futures at $12.71, settlement price, up 15 cents. November futures at $12.50 3/4, up 12 3/4 on today. Futures in the bean meal pit finished the nearby contract. May futures up $3.70 at $3.44.50. Bean oil at $52.96, 8 cents higher on the afternoon. Live cattle futures at April contract, $110.50, down $3. March feeders today at $126.40, were down $1.50. The April futures there at $127.65 were down $3 on the day as well. Coming up in just a couple minutes, we'll talk with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. The nearby crude oil futures at $98.41 a barrel, up $1.23. In the April, the May at $99.34, up $1.36. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.1 cent, up 4 8/10 cents on the day. And the gasoline, the RBOB, finished 4 3/10 higher at $2.84 6/10. Natural gas, April contract at $3.93 8/10, that finished down 3/10 on the afternoon. And the ethanol futures in the nearby contract, March futures, down 7 10 cents at $2.58 3/10. The gold futures on the afternoon are currently trading at $1,397.70, that is, up $4.90. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now just about 30 points lower at 11,823. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the day. It says this afternoon, mostly sunny skies, a high near 59, southwest winds between 11 and 13, with gusts as high as 18. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low about 44 degrees, south winds between 9 and 13, though gusts as high as 17. And Thursday, mostly sunny skies, a high near 67, breezy, southwest winds between 13 and 22 miles an hour, though gusts as high as 31. Thursday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 56. West-southwest winds between 6 and 16. They'll gust as high as 23 miles an hour. Friday night, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy, a high near 65. North-northwest winds between 3 and 11, gusting as high as 16. And Friday night, partly cloudy, a low of 36 degrees. Saturday, sunny, a high near 56. Saturday night should be partly cloudy, a low of 39. More on the weather when we get to the bottom of this half hour. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, is on the phone line to take up the agricultural futures markets with us. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd. It's a beautiful day in East Central Illinois. It's kind of a little stormy on the financial markets.
Indeed. Can you tell me just a bit about that, please?
Yes. I wanted to tell you the last live quote of the Dow is down 178 points. At one time, it was down over close to 300 points. And there is a news headline from the AP, and I'm quoting it off of CNBC, that they're running a new power line to the troubled generator, and hopefully that will quickly take care of some of the problems from overheating. And, of course, the definition of quickly is still trying to be determined. But there was a lot of people making comments on the major nuclear problem in Japan, and as a result of that, the market did lose a lot of the gusto that we saw earlier in the day. And, you know, with corn higher, and beans did maintain their strength, and it was mainly because of the wet, slow harvest, and possibly the funds aren't quite as long soybeans. And the wheat did lose some of its disaster as well. When I call informed sources, they tell me that there's no indications of delaying shipments of commodities to Japan. And there's no indications of canceling contracts or any nervousness on their part, and it's basically business as usual. So I thought that was good information, and of course the AP information. The other thing that what is a major problem, of course, is the quick trade, and we are seeing crude oil 119 higher. Gold is still higher at the present time.
Well, thank you for bringing this up to date. Of course, I don't have quotes. I don't have the real time quotes that I would at the radio station. I'm talking to you from my home. Dave's sick, and as you probably the listeners know, I'm on a phone line at this point. I was off this week. And I'm filling in for Dave at this moment. And thank you for bringing us up to speed on what those numbers look like. I was interested to hear your reaction to the drop in the marketplace yesterday, what you think that might mean in the grand scheme of things as we head towards what appears to be a pretty good planting season, maybe in the South at this point. We'll hear that a little bit later when we talk to Drew Lerner.
Well, the private weather people are concerned about the western wheat belt as being too dry, and of course that sounds like the weather in the Midwest here seems to be pretty average for this time of year. The big bottom line is we have lost a lot of glitter from that $6 plus futures price at the Beef House Outlook meeting, and it's not as glamorous to raise more corn as it was 10 days ago, so to speak. The big factor here is, of course, the markets had taken a tremendous beating in the financial world, and that does have everybody on edge. And, the big thing here is with the Japanese, unfortunately, are taking a horrible beating here, but, it does mean that they'll use more crude oil. That's bullish the crude oil market. And also, their cost is over $200 billion, and that could give some of our industries some a real big shot in the arm. For example, Caterpillar, Ford Motor Company, John Deere, some heavy industrial companies. This will hurt some of the exporting of commodities and, manufactured goods out of Japan.
Right. And have you heard much chatter among the commodity analysts about what the impact, the economic impact of Japan might be on the export market for corn, whether the thought will be that they'll need to continue to do that as a heavy a pace as they have in the past, whether they'll And if they don't, what kind of impact that might have longer term? And has this really fundamentally shifted the marketplace in some way that we don't quite have a grasp on yet?
Well, last night we did have one of the popular commodity services talking about the neighborhood of maybe postponing or delaying shipment of corn. The impression I get that it's not that way. It's more business as usual. But the big thing is they have to stop the nuclear problem. The other factor is it sounds like it's there's a lot of just-in-time type 30-day inventory of commodities there versus the U.S. processors will have 2 or 3 months supply. It's a little different type of mentality, and it sounds like they need to have commodities coming through quickly, and they do have ports that can handle it. There's a feeling that they can ship it by truck, and it's a very competitive feed industry, so to speak, and it's very modern as well.
Producers in the Midwest will be concerned about pricing out both corn and soybeans for the new crop. Do they stand aside and wait at this point? Or
that would be my impression. We have seen some people take advantage of buying some bull call spreads to protect them on summertime rallies in the marketplace. There is a lot of concern by everyone, farmers, and I think the big bottom line is thank goodness we have an ethanol industry that kind of helps stabilize the dips in commodity prices. From other sources I get is that, it's very profitable to produce ethanol, and we all know our livestock industry should be in pretty good shape here. And there is talk that it is economically feasible to sell corn to China at this particular time. So there is some unknowns about the possibility of business. And, of course, business is what the American farmer wants and needs at this time to help stabilize prices.
Paul, thanks so much. Any final word before I let you go?
Well, this is a trying time, and don't forget to everybody be calm.
All right. Thank you so much, Paul.
Have a good one.
Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Wednesday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In today's agricultural news, Japanese meat imports will recover. Deutsche Bank analyst Christine McGlone predicts a near-term negative impact and an intermediate-term boost for U.S. meat exports as Japan rebuilds following last Friday's 9.0 earthquake and the resultant tsunami. According to McGlone, should rebuilding efforts provide a stimulus, protein demand could strengthen long-term. However, if higher energy prices and taxes to fund rebuilding result in slower long-term economic growth, protein demand will suffer. Well, for the fifth time since the fiscal year began, October 1st, the House of Representatives has approved a short-term spending resolution for the current fiscal year. The vote was 271 to 158. The measure cuts an additional $6 billion from the budget and diminishes the possibility of a government shutdown beginning Friday. The Senate is expected to take action soon. Staying with the budget, yesterday the House Agriculture Committee prepared a letter addressing funding for the agencies and programs under jurisdiction of the committee for FY 2012. Ag Committee Ranking Member Colin Peterson told the committee there's no doubt the current budget situation needs to be addressed and that he's willing to put everything on the table, including exploring potential cuts to programs under the Agriculture Committee's jurisdiction. What he is not willing to do, he says, is to let his committee bear a disappropriate share of the cuts.
There's no doubt that the current budget situation needs to be addressed, and I'm willing, as you are, to put everything on the table, including exploring potential cuts to programs under the Agriculture Committee jurisdiction. What I'm not willing to do, however, is to let our committee bear a disproportionate share of the cuts.
More on that story in our feature for the day in just a moment. Up next, still in Washington, congressional leaders say FTAs will pass. Key congressional leaders believe there is support for the pending free trade agreements with Colombia, Panama, and South Korea. House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Dave Camp of Michigan and Trade Subcommittee Chairman Kevin Brady of Texas believe that if the White House agrees to act on all three pending trade agreements, all would pass the House with bipartisan support. And finally today, Steve Fogelsong, former president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and Illinois farmer, says farmers and ranchers today have a couple of challenges and reasons for optimism. He says the challenges start with government overreach.
From a number of places, through the EPA, really wanting to regulate, in some situations, you know, those of us in agriculture right out of business. And hopefully we've got an opportunity here now to maybe stem that tide and get a little common sense and some science back into those regulations. I think that's what we're really asking for. Let's make sure that before we put a regulation in place and expect folks in agriculture to step up to the plate, let's make sure that it's economically correct.
The optimism, Fogelsong says, starts with good commodity prices.
We got an opportunity to export products, you know, lots of countries in the world. You know, last year in the beef business, you know, it was first year that since the BSE deal that it was the highest amount of exports we've had since then. And we actually wound up being a net exporter of beef for the first time in maybe ever. You know, so I think that's really good. The cow-calf guy, we've got the smallest cow herd since 1955. I mean, he's going to be in the driver's seat because it's strictly a supply and demand deal. All the rest of agriculture, you know, markets are good. I don't care what commodity you're in. It's really good right now. So there's an opportunity to make some money.
According to Fogelsong, another area of optimism for producers is in the estate tax relief. But he says producers need to continue to tell their story and reach out to elected officials. Fogelsong says they shouldn't assume their representatives in Washington will know because they most likely do not know much about agriculture. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon, the 16th day of March. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. We'll pick up now from Washington, D.C., where we left off in the news segment. House ag leaders are demanding the chamber's budget writers give the Ag Committee credit for billions in past deficit savings while writing the 2012 budget. House Ag Chair Frank Lucas and Ranking Member Colin Peterson agree that when it comes to deficit reduction, every part of the next farm bill should be on the table, but they also agree and argued in the panel's just-approved annual budget letter to the House budget writers, the 2012 USDA budget should not be on the chopping block.
While streamlining our programs, we must be careful not to jeopardize the stability of the agricultural industry, which will play a key role in feeding an estimated 9 billion people by the year 2050.
Peterson says ag is leading the nation's economic recovery and assures there are times of high commodity prices. He notes low prices will follow, justifying a strong safety net. Chairman Lucas touched on the same theme.
If every other government program, both mandatory and discretionary, were reduced the same percentage as the federal crop insurance program, it would reduce the deficit $2.3 trillion over the next 10 years.
Lucas pointed out the Ag Committee will do an in-depth audit of all mandatory spending under its control and said changes, if prudent, will be carefully considered. For the 2011 fiscal year, House and Senate leaders are moving another short-term spending bill as talks on a longer-term bill to finish out the year are stuck on where and how much to cut. On agriculture, Peterson argued that cuts were made in the previous farm bills and more recently in crop insurance, where some $6 billion in savings were found, $4 billion for deficit reduction. Chief House Ag Committee economist Craig Jager told ag lobbyists and others last fall there will be no new dollars, likely fewer, for the 2012 Farm Bill. Just $6.4 billion a year per commodity program, some 80% of that direct payments, was available as of the last Congressional Budget Office estimate a year ago. Some 38 programs worth $9 billion have no established funding after 2012. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
To the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason coming to you from my home today in large part, well, because Dr. Haynes did a little surgical procedure on me on Monday, and he wants me to stay put. Doc Haynes, I'm home and taking it easy. Just wanted to make sure that you understand I'm off my feet and sitting in my nice lazy boy at this time on the phone line with us this afternoon to take up the cash grain market with us from the Andersons facility in Delphi, Indiana, is Patrick Kaufman. He's at the Climbers facility there. Patrick, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. We do appreciate that.
You're welcome, Todd.
Can you tell me, this is the first time we've had you on the air, tell me a little bit about yourself and where you came from first.
I originally started with the Andersons over in Champaign, Illinois, and back in 98 and 99, I moved to Delphi and worked in the grain facility at Delphi. Then we built an ethanol plant here at Climbers and obtained an originations agreement with another ethanol facility in Rensselaer, Indiana, and that's my main focus is logistics, markets, basis, in originating grain for Climbers ethanol plant and IBEC ethanol plant.
And then that works perfectly for me. Tell me about origination and how you're doing finding corn at this point.
It seems like we've had a producer corn has slowed down, and as the market has broke, I think we've seen a lot of producers with deer in the headlight type feeling like, how is this possible? Fundamentals have not changed. We're still a tight supply. We're still in a upcoming acre battle. World supply is tight. But when we think about it, the investors that move the market 40 cents a day as they do today versus 4 or 5 years ago, those investors are looking at a market that's uncertain. We're looking at uncertainty economically worldwide. We've got war issues. We have destruction in Japan, one of our leading traders of corn. So there's a lot of uncertainty in the worldwide, and that affects our Chicago Board of Trade price now. Like I said, fundamentally, we have not changed. We still have a big hurdle, big hill to climb.
Thank you so much, Patrick.
You're welcome.
Patrick Kaufman is with the Andersons. I'm Todd Gleason.
It's National Oatmeal Nut Waffle Day. Waffles have been around at least since the time of the Greeks. The Dutch brought the waffle to the U.S. in the 1620s. The patent for the first waffle iron in the U.S. was issued in 1869. The cast iron plates sat on top of wood or gas stoves. The first electric waffle maker was produced by General Electric in 1911. By the way, the waffle iron was the inspiration for a new sole for running shoes in 1971. The company was Blue Ribbon Sports, which today is better known as Nike. On this day in agricultural history in 1791, Samuel Mulliken of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, received a patent for a machine to thresh corn and grain. He was the first person in history to receive more than one patent. We don't know what the machine looks like. The patent was destroyed in a fire in 1836. In 1845, self-rising flour was invented by Henry Jones of Bristol. The flour was an instant hit. A year later, in 1846, Jones was appointed purveyor of patent flour and biscuits to Queen Victoria. Jones spent a number of years trying to convince the Royal British Navy to use his flour. Eventually, he was successful, but only with the help of Florence Nightingale. And in 2007, on this date, the U.S. moved daylight savings time 3 weeks earlier than in previous years in the hopes that it would conserve energy. The concept was first introduced during World War II in Great Britain as a coal-conserving measure. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us from Canada today is Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated, headquartered in Kansas City, Missouri. Drew, thanks so much for joining us on your international remote today.
Thank you for still putting up with me. It looks like the weather across a big part of North America has got a lot of things going on in it right now. You know, we're starting the big snow melt up in the northern plains, and we've got a lot of snow up here in Canada that's got to be melted as well. A lot of concern out there in the farming community about big floods in both these areas and delays in field work. And in the meantime, in the heart of the Midwest, things are just looking peachy down in the southern areas. You know, we've had a lot of moisture, and we're just now getting those rivers and streams back in their banks and some cleanup process underway after some flooding here recently. But it looks like the next week is going to give us a little bit of a break in the southern parts of the Midwest with temperatures in the 60s and some 70s there every once in a while. And we'll just do a really nice job in firming up the soil in a part of that region. And there's a couple of storms that come across that will likely interfere with that whole process. But it looks pretty good right now that we're going to see a lot of improvement and even better conditions down in the southern parts of the country from the Delta into portions of the southeastern states. Oh, my. It looks great. Temperatures in the 70s and some 80s coming up here this week. And the ground will firm up real nicely. And there's going to be some aggressive corn planting taking place across some of that region.
A magnificent start to the spring planting season. Will it stay that way, do you think?
No, not necessarily. I think we're probably going to fall back into some more wet weather. We should have a southwesterly flow pattern with us during a large part of the spring season this year. And so there will be a lot of precipitation coming in from the southwestern United States and marching right across the heart of the plains and into the Midwest. So we will have a little bit of an issue at times with too much moisture. Of course, we've got all the snow that still has to melt in the northern plains. And when it does melt, it's going to cause flooding in both that region and in the middle Mississippi River Basin, because a lot of that's going to head southward over time. And then we add in a bunch of rain with that a little later in the season. And it could get a little messy, a little bit of delays coming up on our planting season, I think.
When we finished up last week, the last time I had a discussion about the weather in South America had turned awfully wet. The producers there were having a tough time with their soybean harvest. Are they getting better conditions yet?
Not really. The excessive rains that occurred for a while there in center-south Brazil did abate, but it still has been raining almost every day in places like Minas Gerais and northern Sao Paulo and neighboring areas of southern Goiás. Even a small part of Mato Grosso has been involved with daily rainfall. Now, some of these areas it's not all that unusual for them to have rain like that during the summer, but we got so far behind the eight ball with the heavier rains earlier this month that it's really difficult now to get into the fields, even though the rainfall that's occurring is not that heavy right now. And it's going to stay this way for at least another week, I think. A lot of precipitation still coming up, not necessarily excessive, but enough to keep them out of the fields at times.
Drew, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Hey, you too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, Missouri, joining us from north of the border today on his remote site there in Canada. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a great afternoon.